The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
So this traditional practice of metta, this is a concentration practice. So you may have noticed that the mind is very directed. We try to focus in a way that's unwavering, as we do in concentration practices. This talk I'm calling the practice of kindness. This week I went to a yoga class. I've been taking yoga classes around Minneapolis. And the teacher, she said, February is the month of love. She said, let's practice being kind to ourselves. Let's practice loving ourselves. And then she paused and she said, it's not for the faint of heart. Yeah. I thought, oh, that's good, you know, and that's true, isn't it? Like, I really appreciate when we take on the practice of kindness, like when we intend to lead with the heart, when we intend to be kind, what often we see is not kindness, you know? We see impatience, or we see irritation, or we see indifference. So all the kind of things that are not exactly kindness are illuminated in that moment when we take on a practice of kindness. So for me, there's a kind of determination and patience and steeliness that are required. So from a Buddhist point of view, kindness is the natural expression or outpouring of wisdom. In the teachings, the Brahma-viharas, maybe you've heard of these, the four divine abodes, loving-kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. These are wholesome states of mind. In the sort of idea of liberation, the wings of awakening, one of the wings is wisdom, and one of the wings is compassion, or the divine abodes. And it doesn't support with wisdom without both, right? So we can sort of sometimes identify and practice with what feels like the coolness of wisdom, the clarity of wisdom, and sometimes we're more in the warmth and the juice of love and compassion. But they are, in fact, inextricable. You know, as the path deepens, they are one and the same. So that comes to be understood. But I think it's also a useful metaphor, you know, the two wings of awakening that support us. So in this chant that we did, the Buddha's words on loving kindness, the first line, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness. And I really appreciate that word skill, in the sense that it's something that we can cultivate, maybe that we need to cultivate. I've come to feel like it's not an option. I come to feel like this needs to be a study in our world. and think of it as a skill, you know, we can all think of kind of the skills that we've cultivated as a dancer. You know, when I decided to move into dance and the kind of discipline and application that required, single-mindedness, showing up to class every single day and training, and you know, and there were fruits to that application. And so I think about, how can I hold the practice of wisdom, and particularly the practice of kindness, in that way? What sort of diligent single-mindedness around investigating kindness, investigating this beautiful divine abode of the heart? Many years ago, I was on a retreat with Sayadaw Upandita. He is sort of the grandfather of the Mahasi Sayadaw tradition of Theravada Buddhism, and a very kind of formidable teacher in some ways that doesn't mince words. This is kind of what I have found to be part of the Burmese culture, that there's there's a kind of severity to the teachings. But I remember on the retreat that we had with him, a woman, and I can't remember her question precisely, but it was something to the effect that she felt like the rigor of the schedule, the rigor of what he was asking us to do with our minds was unnatural. I thought, that's kind of true. You know, I felt, this is true. This feels so regimented. This feels so uncomfortable. But what I remember was his answer in particular. He said, hatred is natural. Greed is natural. Ignorance is natural. I really remembered that, and that it brings me to sort of Buddhist cosmology, this wheel of samsara, the wheel of living and dying that we are sort of on perpetually, birth after birth in Buddhist cosmology. But in the hub of that wheel are considered the three poisons, the three toxins, and they're depicted as a pig and a rooster and a snake, and they're all chasing each other's tails. Each has the tail in the mouth of the other, and it circles. And it's like these poisons are like, the pig is ignorance, the snake is aversion or hatred, because the snake just takes the slightest little touch and it will snap. And then the rooster is greed. Actually, it's a bird. In India, it's actually a bird that has a partner for its life, and the bird demonstrates qualities of being very attached and clinging to the partner. So it's this particular bird. So it's this sort of propelling of these three forces of greed, of aversion, of ignorance that propels this wheel of samsara. And more interestingly, sometimes the pig is depicted with the bird and the snake coming out of his mouth. So ignorance is the base. The pig is the base. Ignorance gives rise to greed. Ignorance gives rise to hatred. So, and until we see the truth, we will be driven, the truth of how it is, until we come into alignment with how it is, we will be driven by these forces like a leaf in the wind. So this is what Upandita, for me, was pointing to, that this is natural. So, and this is why we need life to beat us up, to make us grow, and when possible, having a practice like the Noble Eightfold Path, right? The Buddha offers these beautiful teachings about how we come to investigate these forces in the mind that cause destruction to ourselves, to our world, to each other. And that the other beautiful thing is that the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes, are what appears when greed, anger, and delusion are uprooted. So in fact, the divine abodes are natural to the heart. They are natural when the obscurations are removed. There's a picture of Deepa Ma, an Indian saint in the community room, and someone asked her, and she also has been an influence to our teachers, Joseph Goldstein and Sharon Salzberg, and her influence has made its impact here at Common Ground. But someone asked her, Deepa Ma, what's in your mind? And she said, in my mind there are three things, concentration, loving kindness, and peace. So wanting to be kind doesn't make us kind. I think it's important, though, to have the intention and to figure out how we get there, you know, as a practice. And I think, you know, as I said before, when we have the intention to come from our heart, to meet the moment with kindness, it will illuminate all kinds of things that are other than kindness. And that's not a problem. That's a good thing, because those things are going on all the time, whether we see it or not. So in a sense, we can celebrate that we're noticing that little bit of irritation that is guiding us. We're noticing that little bit of greed that is driving us. And that is a place for investigation. We get to know the terrain of the heart. We investigate. And there's something, I'll just say it here, there's something that has been really valuable to me in the Buddhist teachings, which is called hiri otapa, wholesome shame and wholesome fear. Those words don't have great connotation in our language, but there's something, it's like when we find ourselves in hatred, and we've acted out of hatred, and we've seen the consequences of that, there is a squeeze in the heart when we recognize, you know, and when we kind of feel this harm that we have somehow set in motion. We know that. We all know that, right? And in the Buddhist teaching, this is actually a guardian of the world, the squeeze in the heart, because it's like a teacher. And it's on the backdrop of our own wholesome qualities of heart that illuminates. It's the only reason that squeeze would be there, right? We recognize it as not the way. It's not the way. And we learn from it. And just to say, too, that guilt and shame in the way we think of shame were not considered useful qualities or wholesome qualities of mind in Buddhist teachings. Guilt is not useful. It's a kind of self-identification. That was such a great teaching for me to hear, because we feel like guilt is somehow instructive, like it somehow, I don't know. But this is... this quality of attention to letting the pain land and to really learn from it. And then the wholesome fear is the sweetheart, maybe there's a different way next time. You know, and so we investigate when we feel that hatred. Maybe there's a different way to work with it than lashing out and causing harm to ourselves and others. So that's the wholesome fear. It's like, oh, sweetheart, think about this. Be careful here. So otherwise, if we start to try and study our kindness and we come up with our hatred, right, we will stop this practice because we'll just start to feel bad. We'll start to identify. So it's really an important point that these difficult, afflictive states of mind are welcome into our attention. We welcome them. We care for them. We attend to them. I'm going to read the words of Thich Nhat Hanh, a Vietnamese teacher. Many of you have probably heard of him, you know, from the Mahayana tradition. He says, treat your anger with the utmost respect and tenderness, for it is no other than yourself. Do not suppress it. Simply be aware of it. Awareness is like the sun. When it shines on things, they are transformed. When you are aware that you are angry, your anger is transformed. If you destroy your anger, you destroy the Buddha. For Buddha and Mara is like the personification of ignorance. Buddha and Mara are the same essence. Mindfully dealing with anger is like taking the hand of a little brother. And for those of us who are more fear types than anger types, I'm going to read it again, because this is my inclination. So I have to read it again for myself for fear. So treat your fear with the utmost respect and tenderness, for it is no other than yourself. Do not suppress it. Simply be aware of it. Awareness is like the sun. When it shines on things, they are transformed. When you are aware that you are angry, your anger is transformed. I'm sorry, when you are aware that you are fearful, your fear is transformed. If you destroy fear, you destroy the Buddha. For Buddha and Mara are the same essence. Mindfully dealing with fear is like taking the hand of a little brother. When we are mindful of unwholesome states of mind like anger and fear, they are diminished. And when we are mindful of wholesome states of mind, they're nourished. And that's a beautiful fact. And investigate that in your own mind. I mean, to me, that's a a beautiful fact. And I just want to say a word to, not exactly related, but about spiritual bypass. Like in a community like this, when we aspire to be a certain kind of human being, and when parts of ourselves come to the surface, parts that we are not proud of, you know, there can be a tendency to kind of gloss over or to suppress a little bit. And this is not only true just within ourselves, but within our interactions, within our relationships, that we can kind of use our spiritual practice like, you know, just let go. It's all empty anyway. Don't take it personally. And these are good instructions, but they're not good if they serve to disconnect us from the pain of that feeling, which they can do in really quiet ways, you know. So I think we need to really honor those difficult parts of our heart, and we really need to let them sing their song. Here's a little few paragraphs by Ajahn Mehtanandi. She is one of the few bhikkhunis in our world. She lives in Canada. And these just are powerful words for me. Her parents were survivors of Auschwitz. She says, "Today, while I was reading the names of my grandparents who were murdered together with my aunts and uncles and their children during World War II, their naked bodies thrown into giant pits, these images suddenly overwhelmed me with a grief that I didn't know was there. I felt a choking pressure, unable to breathe. As the tears ran down my cheeks, I began to recollect, bringing awareness to the physical experience and to breathe into this painful memory, allowing it to be. It's not a failure to feel these things. It's not a punishment. It's part of life. It's part of this human journey. If we're able to be with our pain, then we can accept, investigate, and heal. But if it's not okay to grieve, to be angry, or to feel frightened or lonely, then it's not okay to look at what we are feeling, and it's not okay to hold it in our hearts and to find peace with it. When we simply feel the naked pain on its own, our suffering dies. That's the death we need to die. Through ignorance, through our inability to see Dhamma, to see things as they really are, we create so many prisons. We are unable to be awake, to feel true loving kindness for ourselves, or even to love the person sitting next to us. If we can't open our hearts to the deepest wounds, if we can't cross the abyss the mind has created through its ignorance, selfishness, greed, and hatred, then we are incapable of loving, of realizing our true potential. We remain unable to finish the business of this life." And then this is just a short segment, which is from Eddie Hellison's diary. She was a Dutch woman who died in Auschwitz when she was 29. And these are her words. "We have to undergo a still darker night, deprived of our familiar supports. This is a kind of death. And when all has been strained away, our emptiness will be filled with a new presence. Do not relieve your feeling through hatred. Give your sorrow all the space and shelter in yourself that is its due. For if everyone bears grief honestly and courageously, the sorrow that now fills the world will abate." Some years ago, I learned one of our community members had memorized this chant that we did at the beginning, the Buddha's words on loving kindness. And she said that she memorized them so that she could chant them as she rode her bike to work and from work. And I really thought, that is a great idea, kind of when I think about what my mind does on the way to work, especially, you know, and just the cycles of anxiety or just, you know, whatever it might be called. And I thought, this is a good option, you know, like just memorize the chant as a way to change the chapter, you know, have a refuge for when our mind is in a difficult place. So, like, simple things like that, like memorizing, because it has an effect. I feel like when and I've been doing this for 10 years now, like when I notice my mind's in not a healthy place and I can't get out of it, you know, chant those words. So these words have a lot of, like, there are a lot of stories around these words now for me, since they're just, like, so imprinted on my heart. So we can just take upon ourselves, be creative, take upon ourselves ways to practice that are concrete and workable, easy to do. The Buddha, he says, these are the benefits of practicing metta or loving kindness, or in some translations, just kindness. He says, one sleeps easily, wakes easily, dreams no evil dreams. One is dear to human beings, dear to non-human beings. The devas protect one. One's mind gains concentration quickly. One's complexion is bright. One dies unconfused. So I just think about practical things like besides sort of the formal practice of really sitting and studying the heart and the simplicity of kind of our formal practice, but just like in daily life. And I was reminded this week, I was at Regent's Hospital. A friend, someone who's quite close to me, tried to commit suicide. And this was very shocking to me. And I was in the emergency room for hours. And I learned at the end of the evening that this person was stable, but I couldn't see them. So I left, and I was kind of walking through the hospital, and I realized I had no idea where the parking lot was. I felt like I'd kind of walk. I don't know where I was, but I couldn't find the parking lot. There were all these exit signs, but I didn't see any signs for the parking lot. And then this man came up to me in scrubs, and he just said, "Can I help you? Are you lost?" I was lost. I said, "Yeah, I'm just looking for the parking lot." And he said, "Oh, which parking lot did you come in on?" And I was like, I didn't know there was more than one parking lot. He said, "Well, was it above ground or below ground?" And I said, "I think it was both, you know." And so I just didn't know. And so he just started to walk with me. He gave his best guess at, like, where that parking lot that I had parked in, you know. And then he was just saying this story. He was saying, you know, "I'm a pharmacist here, and, you know, we have different little pharmacy departments around the whole hospital, and this place is a maze. So he was just being, like, really graceful about, like, you know, normalizing my confusion. It was just very sweet. And then when I recognized where we were, and then he said, "Do you remember where your car was?" And this was like, I think I must have been a little bit, begging the question, just because I don't know why. But and I assured him, yes, I knew where the car was. But it really touched my heart. Like, I'd have been all right. I'd have found the parking lot whether this man had extended himself or not, right? But just that really moved my heart that he went out of his way. I'm sure he was not a non-busy, I'm sure he was a busy person, but that he went out of his way to kind of take me on that little journey. And it really, I don't know, it inspires me to just take courage, especially with strangers, especially in situations that are filled with uncertainty and we don't know what the right thing is to do, but to really extend myself. Like, I feel like I've lived a life being pretty cautious around giving people their privacy, or, like, you know, it's like, no, just do these things, Wynn, you know, just do these things as skillfully as you can, and you'll get it if it's unwelcome, you know, but really, like, so I have a sort of new resolve to take those moments when I'm in a hurry and maybe would prefer not to help out, or, like, to really value those moments and the ripple effect that they can have. Hmm. Maybe I'll read a poem. I'm reflecting more on Eddie Hillison's words that she wrote in her diary from the concentration camp. Do not relieve your feeling through hatred. Give your sorrow all the space and shelter in yourself that is its due. For if everyone bears grief honestly and courageously, the sorrow that now fills the world will abate. So reading that a second time, I was reminded the week of 9/11, back in 2001, sometime during that week, a little poem appeared in the bulletin board at the Birchwood Cafe on 25th Street. And it was this to me is just a powerfully wise poem. And it was written by Don McKenzie, and I cannot find a poet named Don McKenzie, so maybe this is just a wise neighborhood bodhisattva who wrote this poem, but I want to share it with you. It's called The Mourning Tree, mourning as in grief, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. And he writes, autumn has come. Let the innocent, you know, and this is, if you recall, it was that time of uncertainty of, you know, no one knew what was happening, what the response should be, who was responsible. It was really this kind of falling apart time that the Twin Towers came down. Autumn has come. Let the innocent be given release from the harvest of our grief. We have awoken from the dream. The sky falling, bright steel rain. Ashes to ashes, all fall down. The burning sky, flesh and stone. We have woken, lashed, cruel to the mourning tree. Whose fruit sown from withered limb, we all reap. Amid cries for war justice, a requiem arises from the millions bound beside. There, grieving rings a quiet plea. Sorry. There rings a quiet plea. Autumn has come. Let this flowering, bitter sorrow tree bear no fruit, and misery surcease. I'm just thinking of the sorrow that has been set in motion from that time, the bitterness that has been set in motion from that time. And then the Buddha's words, you know, hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone. And this is an old rule. I'm just going to read it again formally. Hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. Hatred ceases by love alone. This is an old rule, or sometimes it's translated, this is an eternal law. So, I was going to have us do a little just meditation, but it's already 11:35, so maybe we can just share together for, you know, 5 minutes before the children come in, just, you know, moments of, you know, how we understand kindness in our own heart and how we understand our own moments of unkindness, you know. Maybe we can just share together Is there anything that comes to mind or any questions you have around that?
Okay, so first of all, when I want to thank you, I haven't been here when you've led, so this is really beautiful, and I really appreciate your tears. So thank
okay.
you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So a moment of confession. When it came up in doing the loving kindness medicine, when I realize when I'm in my heart fully, I'm just able to see a person without all the story I know. You know, anything that's, it's easier sometimes for me to love the animals, to love the person I don't know in a real connected way, because it's not cluttered with the problems I've had with that person. So if I can let that dissolve, then just really return to my heart and not, you know, get the ego out. Mm-hmm. And that's where I keep wanting to reach, is to not allow the stories, my negative experiences with people, to interfere with the love that I really have.
Beautiful. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks. And I also appreciate your tears. It was interesting that you said you're sorry. It's like, no, it's actually a gift that you did. When I started this meditation this morning, and you were talking about loving kindness, I just felt like this felt so small and insignificant in the face of what we're facing in our world right now. And I felt this is just pointless. I mean, I just was sitting with it, and by the end, I actually feel like, yes, I think something you said about every little kindness, about that story about the guy in the scrubs, is like every little thing we do that's small, that makes a difference, does push the kindness forward. And I mean, it's such a big issue, but I went from the beginning of this meditation to feeling like this is pointless. Who cares if I give loving kindness to somebody? It's not going to make any difference, because it feels like one drop of water on a piece of granite. But I think coming to this community and sitting here with all of us and all of us doing this, and knowing there's more people doing this, and anyway, it just made a huge difference. So thank you for making my day.
Great. Hello, my name is Paul. Thank you very much for everything this morning. When we first began meditation and I heard that it was going to be a guided metta, I was like, no. Because I just wanted to do my regular old comfortable Vipassana, and I was looking forward to just that kind of sit. But this was really good, because there was something that you said during the guided meditation that was, if there's impatience or resistance, or I don't know what language you used, but something to that effect, meet that with loving kindness as well. And that was really, really helpful to me, because there was an aversion to the process that I was really trying to stifle. I was really trying to be like, no, it's okay, mm-hmm. Get into this, it's okay. But, I was really resisting my own resistance and aversion, and just being able to hold that with loving kindness and having that reminder was nice. And, it turned out to be a really good and helpful meditation today, so thank you.
There was an article in the paper, that I think it was Saturday's paper, about this lady had gone to a recent march in Washington, and she was all fired up because of the Women's March kind of thing. And she was driving home, and on the way home, something started to really make a lot of noise in her car, and she pulled over, and this quote, person who identified himself as a redneck, stopped, pulled over, crawled under the car, tied it all up, and all that kind of thing. And it really confused her, because she was really fired up about, marching against Trump and all this kind of thing. And then this guy from the other side came over, helped her, was very careful, and asked if anything else he could do. And she said no, and then just took off. And she was really, and it was an act of kindness from the other side, And it was just, it was touching. So.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. So, I wasn't especially excited about doing a metta meditation today. But one of the things I really do appreciate about how you wrapped it together is because you managed to bring us back to, you phrased it as like wholesome shame and wholesome fear. But what it felt like throughout the course of the talk was like really getting closer to the pain and the tenderness of a broken heart. So even in those times where you can't be as kind as you would like, and you can't muster the skill when you're feeling attacked and mistreated and, you know, a whole host of things. And but really being able to move closer to the heart space. And I think that really resonated with me, and the kind of closing things on love. I mean, a lot of times we think about love and even metta in this very romantic kind of way, but it's really, at least the way I'm experiencing it now, it's really about really getting close to the brokenness, I guess, of this world, and the inevitability of our own brokenness within it. And that's cause for sadness and tenderness and love. And so I appreciate what you did today.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. My name is Duncan. I recently returned from a few weeks in Puerto Rico, living and working on a permaculture farm. And I had the opportunity to sit down with some of the members of that farm and discuss the place that spirituality takes and the work that they do and how they've used that to educate the local communities on how to be self-sustaining, because as we all know, external aid has not been of an adequate means. And something that they taught me that has stuck with me every day that I spent there and going forward is they told me that the greatest lie that we've ever told ourselves is that we are separate. And once we really internalize that truth and actualize that in our actions, then kindness and love become so much easier. And I thought that was a wonderful teaching, especially from that community in particular, which is so remarkably joyful and compassionate despite everything that they have faced.
Yeah. The Buddha wouldn't argue. Yeah, let's end with those beautiful words. The children are here. Thank you.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.